to see how compliant you'll be. And the next thing is the gun. And then you're just at, you're on your knees.
And then apparently your right to vote is being taken away.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. I mean, you can see what tyrants these are. I know Joey's got to go, but love you guys. Bye.
Appreciate it.
Love you. Have a good weekend. There's been a murder or something on Plaza Drive off of Troy Highway.
Well, you get the scuttlebutt on that, and we'll talk about it on Monday.
Well, somebody sent me pictures. There are cops everywhere, and this guy's on the ground, hadn't moved in 30 minutes, so maybe it's a murder.
Well, Jack, I appreciate a great week of shows, and I appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back bright and early on Monday morning, 9 a.m. Y'all stay tuned. Dan Morris is next, and given who just walked in the studio, it should be a very good show. I'm looking forward to it. Y'all stay tuned.
Broadcasting from the Riverside Chevrolet Master Control Center, this is WACV Coosada, News Talk 93.1 FM. When it's Chevy, it's Riverside.
Fox News, I'm Karen McHugh. The Government Accounting Office is shaking things up for the Trump administration. They say after Kristen Nielsen resigned in April, Kevin McAleenan had not been properly designated under the Vacancies Reform Act. This means that both Chad Wolf, who's now acting Homeland Security Secretary, and his deputy, Ken Cuccinelli's appointments are also invalid. Neither one's been confirmed by the Senate. The GAO says they'll refer the matter to the DHS Inspector General for review. Joe Biden's choice of Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate is already paying off.
Since naming Harris to the Democratic ticket, the Biden-Harris team has raised $48 million in campaign contributions.
Fox's John Decker, both Biden and Harris will be officially nominated next week during the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee. America is listening to Fox News.
The Rich Thomas Weather Network, brought to you by Alabama Wholesale Lumber. Alabama Wholesale Lumber, serving the River Region with the best quality building materials for decades. Contractor to do-it-yourselfer. Call Alabama Wholesale Lumber.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. It's another day when those afternoon and evening storms will be in ample supply, scattered to numerous showers and thunderstorms, locally heavy downpours. High temperature in the low 90s today. We'll be down to the mid-70s for the overnight low tonight. Not quite as many storms tomorrow, but still scattered around in the afternoon and evening hours, high in the low 90s. And then the storms become widely separated on Sunday, few and far between by then. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
Brubaker Motors is celebrating 80 years in the family business with huge savings on cars, trucks, and SUVs from our dealership to your driveway. Shop anytime online. It's better at Brubaker.com.
From CBS 8 and ABC 32, I'm Julia Brooks. Troy University confirms 40 active COVID-19 cases on campus in the last 2 weeks. Officials say anyone testing positive will be isolated, and anyone believed to be at risk for exposure will be contacted and asked to self-quarantine. A Perry County School Board member and former county commissioner is facing sex abuse and attempted rape charges in Dallas County. Deputies say 66-year-old Donald Nichols was arrested Thursday night after a woman alleges that Nichols made unwanted sexual advances at her. He's since bonded out of jail. Circuit Judge Jacob Walker has granted the motion to step down from the case involving Johnston Taylor, the teen charged with the deaths of Rod and Paula Bramblett. Taylor's lawyers filed a motion on August 10th to have the judge recuse himself. The new judge over the case is Christopher Hughes. Those are some of this morning's top stories. For more on these stories and others, be sure to watch Alabama News Network on CBS 8 and ABC 32. I'm Julia Brooks.
The views and opinions of the following program are solely those of the host and other contributors. These do not necessarily represent those of Liberty Acquisitions 825, Blue Water Broadcasting, its management, staff, or any advertisers.
Have you ever thought you'd like to own a zero-turn riding mower, but you just couldn't justify it because either your yard is too small or the price is too big? Hey, folks, Bruce Holding with CTE Outdoor Power introducing the new Hustler Dash. Starting at only 34 inches wide, the Hustler Dash is perfect for small yards. And because it's on sale now for only $22.99, It's the perfect price. Bottom line, the Hustler Dash is the most compact and affordable zero turn on the market today. And when you purchase CTE's VIP package, you get free delivery upon purchase. And for as long as you own your Hustler, you'll get free pickup and delivery, free blade sharpening, our 7-day repair guarantee, and a free rental mower while yours is in our service department. With service like that, why go anywhere else? And military personnel, to honor you, please ask about our military discounts. CTE Outdoor Power, I-85 at Perry Hill Road, and CTEOutdoorPower.com.
Hello, Montgomery. Do you have more people and more devices using the internet at your home? Switch to Wow Superfast Internet 100 for $39.99 per month. And for a stronger signal, add Whole Home Wi-Fi for $9.99 per month. Offer details at WowWay.com.
Wow.
Hey, it's me, your cousin, from Boston. I'm on the radio doing ads for Sam Adams. Now I'll be known as the Sam Adams guy instead of the dude who fell in the quarry. Sam Adams Boston Lager is crisp and refreshing, which is why I bring a six-pack wherever I go, except the movies anymore. Sam Adams, from Boston, with love. Here's a legal pot. Watch how fast I can read. The Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass. Drink responsibly. Now, is that 30 seconds? Are we even close?
Have you wanted to speak a new language but thought it would be too difficult? Then try Babbel. Babbel starts by teaching you words and phrases that gradually get more complex. Soon, you're practicing short conversations. So in 15 minutes a day, you'll be speaking a new language in a few weeks. Babbel is built around real life. It teaches you practical conversations that you will actually use. Babbel, language for life. Now try Babbel for free. Just text TRAIN to 484848. That's TRAIN to 484848.
We get Montgomery talking 24 hours a day. The River Region's most trusted voice. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Four times in my life, America's been at war. That's a tragic waste of lives. And it makes you realize how desperately the world needs a lasting peace. Just across the hall here in the White House is the Roosevelt Room, named after the two Roosevelts who served here, one a Republican, one a Democrat. Many decisions are made in that room, and often as I meet with my staff, I gaze up at the five service flags, each representing one of the five military services, and draped from each flag are battle streamers, signifying every battle campaign fought since the Revolutionary War. Each ribbon a remembrance of a time when American men and women spilled their blood into the soil of distant lands. My fondest hope for this presidency is that the people of America give us the continued opportunity to pursue a peace so strong and so lasting that we'd never again have to add another streamer to those flags.
It's the Dan Morris Show. Join the conversation by calling 272-9228. And now, here's Dan Morris.
Temperature is up 20 points. Temperature outside is 88 degrees. I almost reversed those and said temperature outside 20 degrees. Temperature is up 88 points. Let me bring in Mr. Producer himself, the one and only Joey Clark.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we got big news today.
Indeed we do.
Okay, because Conn Smith is going to plead guilty. But he said he didn't really have any bad intent to do what he did.
It was a mistake.
It was a mistake. No, no, it just is. He didn't mean to do that. Mm-hmm. It just kind of happened. The computer slipped out of his hand and went off when he changed the email. Well, we do have an awful lot of stuff going on, but whenever we have things going on in the Middle East, big news, who do we call? Dr. David Sorensen. Dr. Sorensen, welcome back to the Dan Morris Show in studio, by the way.
Thank you very much for having me, Dan.
Love having you in studio, as always. Of course, how have you been?
I've been great.
That's good. You got more, a lot of rest, right?
Well, no. I've been working at home, been working at my office. We've got all kinds of precautions at the Air War College, so I've been cranking stuff out. We're starting to teach. We got our class in, and we're rocking and rolling.
Well, for those who didn't know this, Dr. Sorensen is a Middle East expert at the Air War College here in Montgomery, a great asset to the show, to the community, and to the college. Let's start out. How big is the UAE-Israeli agreement?
It's important. It's always good when Israel and an Arab country sign an agreement establishing diplomatic relations. This is the third one after Egypt and Jordan. It's been a long time. It's been since 1994 that an Arab country has actually formally signed an agreement to establish diplomatic relations. So, you know, it's a big deal in that sense. Absolutely.
We have never really talked very much about the UAE. Give us a kind of the... Tell us about the leadership of UAE, for example.
It is one of the most interesting countries in the world. One of the newest countries in the world, founded only in 1971 when the British finally decided to leave the Arabian-Persian Gulf area. It's a combination of seven emirates, but it's really Dubai and Abu Dhabi, the two big ones. The glue that held it together is the father of the current crown prince and leader, Mohammed bin Zayed Al-Nahyan, who is revered in the UAE as an extraordinarily important figure. His son, the crown prince, is actually the leader because the actual emir has been crippled by a stroke for a long time. So Mohammed bin Nayan Al-Zayed is really one of the most interesting leaders in the Middle East. He's kept his country together. He's managed to build an extremely wealthy province out of a small place that used to do pearls for a living. They've survived the economic meltdown reasonably well, and they're building new buildings every day. But more importantly, he is in a contest with the other GCC state leaders for influence. And this particular agreement really pushes him way up on the Gulf Cooperation Council totem pole, because he's in many ways going to get a lot of attention for doing this path-breaking agreement.
How about the geographic significance of where UAE is?
It's located on the Straits of Hormuz. It's right across the Arabian Gulf from Iran. In fact, if you take a boat out from one of the ports in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, you can actually see Iran on the horizon. It borders Saudi Arabia. It borders Oman. But it sits on a place where about 70% of the world's seaborne oil and gas move out of. So it's hard to think of a place more strategically significant than where the UAE is, and a place that's probably one of the more dangerous places in the world relative to war, because, again, Iran is right across the Gulf.
Now, it's kind of the choke point of the Persian Gulf, isn't it?
It is. It
so is ships would have to navigate towards UAE to avoid the Iranian Navy fast ships and things.
They go through a very narrow place known as the Straits of Hormuz. It looks wide on a map. When you go out in a boat, you realize how narrow it really is, because there's coral heads, there's sandbars. It's a very narrow strait. There are two lanes, one going in, one going out. The one going out is the one closest to the UAE. And it shares that responsibility with Oman, which also borders that area. But again, you can see Iran, and you can even see Iran's military bases right across from the UAE. So it's not the safest place in the world, and it gives the UAE a real responsibility for maintaining the ability to transit that particular area.
What do you think Iran thinks about this?
Iran and Turkey have both denounced the deal, unsurprisingly.
Well, Turkey was a surprise to me, but you can tell me why isn't.
I will, because Turkey and the UAE are now real competitors in a whole lot of areas, and that competition is really getting important. Iran, unsurprisingly, Iran has been supporting the Palestinians. Iran has been giving money and arms to Hamas, the Sunni Palestinian group, militia, whatever one wants to call it. Turkey is interesting because Turkey is increasingly striking a pose independent of the other Muslim countries as the only Turkish Muslim majority country. Turkey and the UAE are backing separate forces in Libya, which is becoming a dangerous place. And so it's unsurprising that Turkey has denounced this. Turkey has also been supporting the Palestinians for a long time. There was an unpleasant incident some years ago when Turkey tried to supply the Palestinians with aid, and the Israelis stopped them, and some lives were lost, what was known as the Mavi Marmara incident. So Turkey has been supporting the Palestinians. What I find really interesting is that not a single other Arab country out of the 22 Arab countries in the Arab League has criticized the UAE's deal, which kind of says that in many ways they understand it, and some may actually follow the UAE.
You mentioned Libya, which kind of was going to be a future question here. What are the powers that be there in Libya that are fighting over territory? ISA has a remnant there. Muslim Brotherhood, who else?
Well, it's interesting. There is the Government of National Accord, which the United States, the UN, and most other Arab countries have recognized as a legitimate government. But there's a breakaway movement led by a guy named Khalifa Haftar, who is a former general, lived in the United States for 20 years, and decided to lead a breakaway movement from the port city of Tripoli. So there's fighting between General Haftar's forces and the Government of National Accord forces. The UAE has been supporting General Haftar, as has Egypt and Russia. Turkey has been supporting the Government of National Accord. This is not just about these particular factions. This is about access to Libyan oil. Libya has a lot of oil, and the riches there for whoever wins could be substantial. So it's right on Egypt's border, too. So the Egyptians have got their antenna up on this. But so far, Turkey is backing the winning side. It seemed like General Haftar was on a roll, but he overextended his forces. He made some strategic blunders. And now the side that Turkey is backing has really gotten the upper hand to the point where General Haftar is now talking about suing for peace. So this is a victory for Turkey and a loss for the UAE and Egypt. The U.S. has been kind of undetermined about who it's going to back. There's been some backing of both sides. But again, for the UAE, this is a loss.
Let me go to a break, Dr. Sorensen. I'm going to be back with Dr. Sorensen right after this.
The Dan Morris Show.
Turn on. Tune in.
News Talk 93.1 FM.
He may not know whether he's coming or going, but whether you're going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings 6 till 9 and afternoons 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Hey there, I'm a dog. Now, I know we tend to eat things we probably shouldn't, but what you put in that food bowl really makes a difference. And dogs love it when you feed us Nutrina dog food from Prattville Farm Center. I love the taste and the energy it gives me, and you'll love it too, because it's made locally and won't hurt your wallet. Now I've got squirrels to chase. See ya.
See the full line of Nutrina products at Prattville Farm Center, 1154 South Memorial Drive, or call 365-5400.
Here in Alabama, we know strong borders and tough immigration laws keep our country safe. What part of this does Senator Doug Jones not understand? In Washington, Senator Jones joined D.C. liberals and voted against $25 billion to build a wall on our southern border. Jones even said,
I'm not going to give wall money just to give wall money.
It's part of a pattern. Jones even voted against declaring an illegal immigration emergency at the Mexican border. Once again, trying to stop us from building a wall. Senator Jones needs to get tough on border security. Call Senator Doug Jones at 334-792-4924. Urge him to support S-53, the Wall Act of 2019, and vote to fully fund the border wall. Because border security is national security. Paid for by One Nation. www.onenationamerica.org.
A1 Plumbing.
Listen, I need a plumber over here right now.
Let's see. We could get to that in about 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Uh-huh.
Look, I was installing a new toilet and the water line broke. Now I'm standing in about 3 feet of water and it's still rising fast.
Uh-huh.
Look, I'll give you $50 extra if you can send someone right now.
Maybe 2 weeks.
Okay, $100, but you need to get here right now.
All right, keep your shirt on. What's that address?
I'm at 3301 Center Avenue. It's a block from the door.
Must have changed his mind.
Whether your problem is big or small, Cole Plumbing can fix it right, usually the first time, and as economically as possible. With our experienced and background-checked employees, we take pride in knowing that we are one of the most trusted companies in the area. When there is trouble with your bowl, call on Cole, 279-8919, or go to coleplumbing.com.
American Medicine Today, we speak to cutting-edge medical and science innovators, reconnect with patients to recount stories of recovery after the Bonatti spine procedures, and political issues plaguing our nation. Saturday, noon to 1, News Talk, WACV.
If it concerns your community, you'll hear about it on News Talk 93.1. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
I must be without you. Another lonely park, another
272-9228, that's where we are. Duke, hang on for me, my friend. I have a couple of questions before I go to a call here. Were you surprised when Israel said that they were not going to do the annexing of the Gaza?
I was not surprised at all. There was a lot of opposition to the annexation, which, of course, was actually a part of the Trump-Netanyahu peace plan. Benny Gantz, who is Netanyahu's coalition partner with the Blue and White Party, voiced opposition. Most of the opposition came from the Israeli Defense Force. They feared that they would lose security cooperation with the Palestinians and Jordan if Netanyahu tried to annex it. So I think this was an out for Netanyahu. It gave him something to say, look what I got, even though I have taken the annexation plan off the table for now. But Netanyahu said it's still on the table, maybe sometime later, which has made the UAE somewhat nervous.
Why is Israel having such a hard time with COVID-19?
It's interesting because Israel has a much better healthcare system than a lot of countries in the region. My understanding is that there was hesitancy on the government's part to begin to require some of the precautions, the closing of businesses, the wearing of face masks and things like that. Netanyahu delayed. That's the charge. And it's also the case that a lot of people come in and out of Israel and bring COVID with them. Israel's makes a lot of money on tourism. People come to the holy sites. And it's pretty clear that a lot of this came from Europe, from Asia, possibly even from the United States. As, again, Israel has welcomed in tourists, and they didn't, according to what I have read, take the kinds of precautions at the airport that other countries have, and that's one of the reasons why it's grown as high as it
is. Is Jerusalem impacted more than Tel Aviv?
Probably yes. The figures I've said is yes. Jerusalem is much more densely packed and populated than is Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is spread out all over the place. Jerusalem is a lot of older neighborhoods, especially in the older city, and again, the population density, it's kind of like New York City. It's going to make COVID spread more rapidly there than in Tel Aviv.
Interesting. So Israel, I noticed Israel's stock market went up on this news. It seems that they're very happy with this whole thing.
Right. Yes, they are.
Who's unhappy with this other than Iran and Turkey?
There's the settlers are unhappy with it. The settlers thought that Netanyahu promised them that he would annex and incorporate into
the
Israel,
West Bank settlers.
The West Bank. Okay. Not only the West Bank where the settlers are, but also the Jordan Valley, which Jordan claims. And so far, the settler movement have claimed treachery. Naftali Bennett, who formed his own kind of pro-settler party after breaking with Netanyahu, has said essentially, you lied to us. You promised us that if you were reelected, you would immediately begin to incorporate the settlements into Israel. Instead, you made a deal with the UAE, which we get nothing for. And so it's hard to say how much that will affect the votes. The settler supporters in the United States, and that would include Sheldon Adelman, who was a
he was very outspoken.
Very outspoken, was a major President Trump benefactor, has also claimed treachery. So it's interesting. Some of the liberal Zionists think that this is going to essentially impede a two-state solution. I don't agree with that, but there has been some opposition from what's left of the old Israeli political left.
Let's move to Iran. Iran and China seem to have come up with an agreement of help, and they're getting exchanging oil, buying oil, and things like that, and saying to heck with the restrictions the U.S. is talking about. What is the impact of that? Does that give Iran more time? Does it put at bay the public being mad at them for what's going on in their economy? Does it help cure their economic problems?
Well, Iran is suffering not only from the economic sanctions, which have been pretty much abided by everybody except China and Venezuela, but they've also been badly impacted by the COVID. Good figures are hard to come by, but many thousands of Iranians are reportedly dead from COVID. And the administration didn't handle it well. It's partly a function of a divided government. But there's a lot of unhappiness about shortages. There's a lot of unhappiness about the failure of the healthcare system to really manage the COVID response. And interestingly enough, Iran was supposed to have elections this week. The regime has canceled them because, allegedly, of COVID. My sense is that they've canceled them because they don't like the outcome. Both the clerics and the reformist president administration have taken real hits. So there's an awful lot of unhappiness in Iran. And I'm sure that the government will try to rally the population around what they will see as a treachery on the part of the UAE and supporting Israel. But I think, again, Iran's only real friend is China right now. China views Iran as an important pillar on the so-called Belt and Road Initiative, which is China's effort to try to establish sea and land connections to much of the rest of the world. And a major part of that runs through Iran. And I think China may see itself as getting an advantage in dealing with Iran. The problem for China is that there are a lot of countries that are unhappy with Iran, certainly to include some of the Arab countries that China is also trying to connect to this Belt and Road thing. So I think that in the end, the Iran-China partnership is probably not going to pay off all that well for both countries.
Let's talk about the social and economic and governmental unrest. You don't see it here, but if you go to European or Middle East news, you see that you've got demonstrations in the streets. You got folks that are, they seem to be pretty mad. So what's the social situation there now?
It's getting dangerous for both administrations. Again, Iran has a kind of a dual government. There's the clerical system, and there's the president, who is somewhat of a reformer. Although, again, the president promised good things from the Iran nuclear deal, which President Trump suspended American participation in. And as a consequence, the president and his foreign minister have really lost power. The good news for the president is because he's lost power, he's not blamed as much for the chaos that's in Iran now as are the clerics, which is probably a good thing for everybody except the clerics. Iran is a fascinating country. The people there are very irreligious. We think of them as religious fanatics. Very few Iranians go to mosque. Very few Iranians observe Ramadan. Very few Iranians perform the Hajj, not only because they're not religious, but because it's dangerous there for Iranians. And alcohol is widely available. I've got pictures of Iranian women serving beer. Rock and roll is widely popular. Iran, in many ways, is not typical of what we think of when we think of a Muslim country. And so the clerics and their efforts to govern through religious fidelity have been backfiring for a long time. And again, the bad response to COVID, the economic failures of the country are only making it worse. So yes, people are out on the streets. The Republican Guard Corps Bashij, which is the internal enforcement, are busily cracking skulls. Lots of people are going to prison. They're not able to keep a lid on this.
Let me go to a break. I want to continue on with Iran right after this.
Dan Morris Show.
It's warm outside, no clouds are in the sky, but I need myself a place to go and hide.
Want to carry News Talk in your pocket? Download the News Talk 93.1 app from the App Store. Available on iPhone and Android. Never miss a moment. Download now.
Hello, sports fans. Chris Cleats here, stepping out from behind the sports microphone and standing here today in front of the office of asset preservationist David Artist. I've been talking with a few people here, and sir, you told me this is your first time visiting David Artist. Why did you wait so long?
I got hairy legs.
I see. Well, ma'am, I understand you made a long trip to get here. How are you feeling?
I don't feel no ways tired.
Well, how about you, ma'am? Do you have time to talk with me today?
I'm gonna get me a beer.
Well, okay. Ma'am, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Don't mess with me.
Right. Well, they probably came to see David Artist because they know he has nearly 40 years of experience as an asset preservationist. He's going to take care of your money like it was his very own. Call him today at 279-7431. That's 279-7431. Sir, would you like the final word in this interview?
I'm going to be Joe Biden.
Call David Artist today and somebody get me out of here.
Hey, y'all, it's Lewis at the Capitol Oyster Bar right down here on that beautiful Alabama River. And let's talk about that beautiful river. If you hadn't ever been down here and experienced it, it really is a pretty river. Water's so clear right now, you can, in the shallow parts, you can see the fish, you can see the turtles in it. It's just a pretty space. We got some pontoon boats you can rent and ride up and down the river and bring your friends or family and check out what's going on down here. We'll also cook you up some fresh seafood, man. Get some fresh crab claws in from by all the bachelors, from shrimp from down there, getting our fresh fish from Destin over here, and getting you some good food, y'all. We also got a killer ribeye steak we cook up. That's hard to believe at an oyster bar, but we sell a bunch of ribeyes. Come down and check it out if you think I'm kidding you. You'll know when you leave. But let's talk about also the RV park. We got a place you can bring your campground down here and bring your camper with you, and we'll get you fixed up. Have a good time on the river. Check it all out at CapitalOysterBar.com and our Facebook page. Y'all get down here soon. We've been missing you.
Hi, folks. This is Rick Clark with Clark Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. I'd like to take just a minute to talk to you about our experience with Blue Water Broadcast. One of the hot topics in our staff meetings is spending advertising dollars. If your company or firm is anything like Clark Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, those dollars are limited, so you have to spend them wisely. That's why we choose Blue Water Broadcasting. Our marketing analysis has proven consistently that spending advertising dollars with Blue Water Broadcasting has contributed significantly to our bottom line. And for that, Clark Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing is truly grateful. So, if you want to spend your advertising dollars wisely, choose Blue Water Broadcasting and see the difference.
millennials, Gen X, baby boomers, Gen Z, no matter what you call your customers. Over 90% of them listen to radio every week. Reach them where they are. Blue Water Broadcasting. Local folks helping local business.
Rich Thomas Weather, a service of Riverside Chevrolet Wetumpka. If it's Chevy, it's Riverside. Best price, best selection. Check them out on the web at riversideusa.net.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. It's another day when those afternoon and evening storms will be in ample supply, scattered to numerous showers and thunderstorms, locally heavy downpours. High temperature in the low 90s today, will be down to the mid-70s for the overnight low tonight. Not quite as many storms tomorrow, but still scattered around in the afternoon and evening hours, high in the low 90s, and then the storms become widely separated on Sunday, few and far between by then. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
CBNS Bank has digital banking solutions to help you keep up. Check balance. Pay bills, transfer funds, manage your card, deposit checks, and much more. Learn more at cbsbank.com. Charges and fees may apply from your cellular service provider. Contact your service provider for information. Member FDIC.
News and talk without the static. The River Region's most trusted voice. News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Now back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
Two seven two nine two two eight. That's where we are. Don't forget, we're doing Sweet Creek Farm Market Get Pass drawing today at 2:30. Any call can get in on that, and then we have another drawing, but that will be next Thursday. The Mortgage Corporation of the South gift card $50 from John Williams himself. 5679000 Mortgage Corporation of the South. Now Sorensen, Trump said if he's re-elected that the Iran will come to the negotiating table within 30 days, and he'll be able to pound out some type of agreement with them. Number one, do you think that Iran is trying to wait out Trump in the election?
I think they will. I think they're hoping for a Biden victory because Biden has suggested, if not specifically said, that he is interested in trying to reopen the nuclear talks. So I think Iran is going to hope that they can wait out the Trump term and that he won't be reelected. If he is, I'm not sure what he can offer Iran that would really get them to do all the things that he wants. Because he specified not only does Iran abandon its nuclear weapons program and continue the provisions under the Obama era agreement, but also give up its ballistic missile program, and most importantly, stop supporting what the president has called terrorist groups, which would mean no support to Hezbollah, to the Houthi in Yemen, to Hamas in Palestine. In many ways, those organizations are fundamental to Iran's foreign ministry and foreign policy because Iran has no friends in the Middle East. And so it has to rely on these Shia groups, and in the case of Hamas, a Sunni group, non-state actors that essentially enable Iran to engage in some kind of deterrence, particularly against Israel, without supporting Hezbollah and the al-Houthi, which are in Saudi Arabia's backyard. Iran really has no real security except for its very large military.
But if Trump remains in office, didn't he still choke off their money and so their ability to feed those organizations with money from Iran? Didn't that become more and more difficult?
It does. And in fact, that's an important point. Because
if terrorists don't have money, they're not happy campers.
Well, that's true. Although it's interesting that Iran has cut back. It cut back 10% of its payment to Hezbollah, something like 15% to the Houthi, although I've seen figures that reverse those. What is interesting is that Hezbollah earns its own money. Hezbollah, based in Lebanon, is simply a part of the corrupt system in Lebanon. So Hezbollah charges money for services just like everybody else in Lebanon. And it also raises money in some other interesting ways. They're probably ties to international crime. So, yes, it would hurt Hezbollah if Iran is forced to cut off money. But at the same time, Hezbollah is still out there. They have been able to rearm and more than rearm since the 2006 war with Israel. We think they have 100,000 rockets located in southern Lebanon. In fact, a couple of years ago, I stood on that border and looked into Hezbollah-controlled Lebanon. It is right on the Israeli border. And even if they can't buy any more missiles, those missiles are still sitting there threatening Israel. So I think, yes, it would hurt Hezbollah to a degree, but I think they'll still survive.
So would Iran be able to make it through 4 years of Trump, another 4 years of Trump?
I think they would. It's interesting that if we look at the results of other sanctions, Saddam Hussein survived sanctions for a very long time. We finally had to invade Iraq to remove him. Cuba has survived sanctions since 1961, 1960, and Venezuela so far is surviving sanctions. The odd thing,
but if you want a 55 Chevrolet, you need to go to Cuba.
Well, believe me, I was just there a couple of years ago and got to actually ride in some old cars. It's a pretty cool collection. The problem is they're all rusty old four doors. But sanctions, targeted specific sanctions, tend to work better than the kind of overall sanctions. I think if Trump offered Iran an off-ramp from the sanctions that is something they could buy into, a reaffirmation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in exchange for a limited relief from economic sanctions, and then the inducement, the more you do, the more we'll take off the sanctions, that might work. But what Trump has said is he wants them to accept the whole deal carte blanche, and I don't think they're going to do that.
What's the biggest sticking point, the missiles or
support for the other organizations?
Oh, okay.
That is fundamental to Iran's security policy. The missiles, to me, the missiles don't really matter if Iran doesn't have a nuclear program. Most countries have long-range missiles. But the real concern is Iran's support for Hezbollah, for the Houthi, for Hamas, and for some other groups as well. Iran has been stirring up some of the Shia groups in eastern Saudi Arabia and also in Bahrain. But again, that's fundamental to what they do because they have no friends in the region.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Michael. Michael, you're on with Dr. Davis Horenson.
Hi. How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. First of all, I want to shout out Frederica Bimel. You know, the president of Iran is the head of government of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And the president is the highest ranking official of Iran. However, the president is still required to gain the supreme leader's official approval before being sworn in before the parliament. And the leader also has the power to dismiss the elected president at any time. The president carries out the decrees and answers to the supreme leader of Iran as well and functions as the country's head of state. Unlike the executive in other countries, the president of Iran does not have full control over the government, which is ultimately under the control of the supreme leader. Would you agree?
Yes. The president has very limited power.
He was answering your question.
That was a bizarre call,
but without a doubt. Let's move to Beirut. We all saw the horrific explosion that happened over there. From that, a collapse of government 3 days later. That was absolutely amazing to me. Give us the 101 about Beirut. Educate us to what is Beirut, what's the significance of Beirut, and then the actions that have happened from the explosion to now.
Beirut is one of the most interesting capitals of any country in the Middle East, sometimes called the Paris of the Orient. A beautiful cosmopolitan city in the 19th, early 20th century, mostly destroyed during the incredibly tragic Lebanese Civil War that ran from about 1972 until really 1990-91 when it finally ended and much of Beirut was destroyed. Rebuilt again by Rafik Harari, who was the prime minister and a very, very wealthy person who made a lot of money in construction in Saudi Arabia. And so today, in many ways, Beirut is a very modern capital that presides over a broken country. The problem for Beirut is it's a part of Lebanon. And Lebanon, in many ways, was born broken. The National Pact that was agreed to in 1946 divides power up not by competence, but by religion. And so there is no majority. There is only a bunch of minority religions, and positions are assigned, again, not by competence, but by religion. So the president is a Maronite Christian. The prime minister is a Sunni Muslim. The speaker of parliament is a Shia. The head of the court system is a Druze. And all positions in the ministries are apportioned by religious confession rather than by competence. And what that means is that nothing in Lebanon really works. So bribes are required for everything. And that leads us to the explosion. We know that the 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate came in on a Russian freighter that apparently went broke, and then was stored in a warehouse under conditions where there were no safeguards. And the way that works is, if you pay bribes to the Ministry of Warehouses or whoever takes the bribes, there are no conditions. You also have to pay bribes to the Ministry of Electricity for electricity, which in the summertime lasts maybe 8 hours. So what we think happened is that a fire broke out on the pier. We have pictures of firefighters going in to try to put out the fire. Piers catch fire. I spent a lot of time on piers in the Navy. They're a bad fire hazard. Apparently, the warehouse next to the ammonium nitrate warehouse was filled with fireworks, also stored under bribe conditions with no safeguards.
That's the first time I've heard that.
It's interesting when you look at the slow down photos of the explosion. You can see fireworks going off, and they're exploding into the air. You can also see firefighting vehicles on the pier. The fireworks go off, the warehouse catches fire, the fireworks start exploding, and of course, the warehouse right next to it, filled with 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate, is hit by a firework, and that is was the explosion.
That is amazing. I had an EOD friend of mine who said, "Dan, there's no way that went off without having an accelerant to do it."
It was fireworks. Yeah, again, you can see the fireworks. You can see the fireworks exploding. The temperature is very likely that the air conditioning was off, and you can imagine in the middle of the summer in August how hot it got inside that warehouse for both the fireworks and the ammonium nitrate. Ergo, the explosion. Now, there's lots and lots of rumors. The Americans did it. Hezbollah did it. New story today, the Israelis did it, of course.
But I blame them for everything.
Well, everybody gets blamed, except the fact is that accidents happened in the Middle East as well. Think Texas City, 1947, when a ship that had about that much ammonium nitrate blew up, killed over 581 people, destroyed most of the city. It's a very, very volatile explosive, which is normally used for fertilizer. It was apparently on its way to Cameroon when the Russian ship company ran out of money and just decided to park their ship in Beirut. So a lot of conspiracy theories. None of them so far has any real good evidence behind it. But the tragedy is, again, that what it reveals is the broken political system in Lebanon, which has also been suffering from COVID, from the utter total collapse of the Lebanese pound. Back in 1997, the finance minister pegged the Lebanese pound to the American dollar. And what that means is, that's a recipe for disaster. You get short-term stability, long-term disaster. And so the Lebanese pound lost 80% of its value, which means essentially that Lebanon can't import anything without paying 80% more than it would have to had it pound not been devalued. That's a lot of economic jargon for saying the Lebanese economy has virtually collapsed. And again, as in Iran, we see hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets angry at the broken system.
Let me go to a break and let us continue on with Lebanon and particularly Beirut right after this.
Going, but whether you're going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings, 6 till 9, and afternoons, 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
What would best benefit the Millbrook community now and in the future? I'm Mayor Al Kelly, and this is the question that I ask myself when I'm making decisions that affect all Millbrook citizens. Millbrook has experienced tremendous growth over the past 24 years. We've grown from 6,000 people to approximately 20,000 people. Our revenues have increased from $2 million to $15 million. We've worked hard to create a better quality of life, to keep our community safe, and increase economic growth and development. I'm Mayor Al Kelly, and I'm asking for your vote on August 25th.
Paid political by Al Kelly Campaign Committee.
Napa Know How!
This month, Napa's got all kinds of motor oil deals that can save you some serious cash. Like a 5-quart jug of Napa Full Synthetic Motor Oil for just $16.49. With savings like that, you may start feeling like a VIP. But don't let it go to your head. These oil deals are for everyone. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
General States pricing. Sales prices not include applicable state, local taxes, or recycling fees. Offer ends 8/31/20.
The River Region's first and only news talk station on FM. Live, local talk. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
Closing segment with Dr. David Sorensen, our Middle East expert. Really appreciate him being in the studio today. Let me carry on with Beirut. What's going to happen now that the government basically has walked away? How do they reinstall a government, or do they want to reinstall a government?
What they've done is asked the ministers to stay on as a caretaker government. That's an excuse for, we'll have elections, and either the same people will be reelected, or people from the same factions will be reelected. The problem is, again, that everything is apportioned by religion. So the ministers are apportioned by religion. So the ministry of whatever, fertilizer, for example, if that person happens to be a Maronite Christian, another Maronite Christian will be selected for that position, whether or not they know anything about fertilizer. Again,
the government way of doing things.
Yeah, the government way of doing things. And again, it's the corruption in Lebanon, tragically, is some of the highest in the world, because, again, when you have dysfunctional
ministers. That's saying a lot now. That's saying a lot.
Well, there's a lot of corrupt countries, but again, corruption is kind of baked into the Lebanese political system, unlike other countries, because competence is not required to be a minister. And so people get into it not because they want to make better education or better health, but because it's a way to distribute favors to their friends. So if you want electricity, you'll get 8 hours of electricity. You want 24 hours? You pay a little extra. You want your garbage collected. A few years ago, garbage was piled up so high in the streets of Beirut, you couldn't move around because people weren't paying the corruption for garbage collection.
Are we in a situation that we need to help Beirut and Lebanon out, because they could implode and that would create a vacuum that somebody bad could get in charge?
That's one argument. Now, President Trump has sent some emergency food aid. President Macron has actually visited...
I was surprised at that.
Well, remember, France was the creator of Lebanon. France creates Lebanon in 1939 from Greater Syria because they wanted to protect the Maronite Christians who have strong ties to the Catholic Church. And this was a way for France to get influence and rival Britain. So in many ways, the second language of Lebanon, in addition to Arabic and English, is French. So Macron, like other French presidents, has taken a real interest in Lebanon and visited there and offered to try to help. It's interesting that somebody asked him, by the way, how'd you like to be the president of Lebanon? We'd love to have you. Yeah, you needed a second job. But Macron, again, is faced with the very same problem. You've got to undo the 1946 National Pact. Saudi Arabia tried to do that when Saudi Arabia brokered talks in Taif, Saudi Arabia, to end the Lebanese civil war. They managed to make some changes, but they did not get the so-called confessional system undone, where religious affiliation would no longer matter in the political system. And part of the problem is that everybody has benefited from it. So the Shia have their big men, or Zayim as they call them, the Maronite Christians do, and everybody cuts deals. So the president of Lebanon today is a retired general named Michel Aoun, who's a Maronite Christian. His biggest ally, the Shia militia Hezbollah. He signed a deal with Hezbollah. You support me, I'll support you. So we have people from two very different religious groups sort of in bed with each other because everybody benefits. And that's kind of the way Lebanon works.
I had a really good friend who was from Lebanon, left Lebanon in the early 80s when things were really kind of going down the tubes before the Marine barracks blew up in 83. And he said it's just so sad to see this absolutely gorgeous city that was there that had intellectual property, had just theaters, and was just this great place, just be ruined.
The tragedy of Lebanon is that it's got some of the best universities in the Middle East. It's got some of the best culture in the Middle East. It is a deep side of things like music. Some of the Middle East greatest singers are from Lebanon. Fairuz, for example, whom everybody stops to listen to. It's a very beautiful cosmopolitan city surrounded by snow-capped mountains, beautiful beaches, and yet it's become such a dysfunctional city.
And when off mic you were talking about, we're talking Turkey, mm-hmm. and you said that the mosque being changed from a museum to a mosque back was a major, major thing. Tell the audience why that is.
The building is Hagia Sophia. It looks like Hagia Sophia. It's pronounced Hagia Sophia. It means holy wisdom. It was built by Emperor Justinian of the Byzantine Empire, started in 532, finished in 537. It lasted as a Byzantine church until 1204 when the Crusaders showed up, sacked it, killed everybody inside, and converted it into a Catholic cathedral. Once the Crusaders were gone, it reverts back to a Byzantine church until 1453 when the Ottoman Turks under Mehmet the Conqueror come in and take it, kill a lot of people inside, convert it into a mosque. It remains a mosque from 1453 until 1934 when Turkish Prime Minister Kemal Atatürk, trying to take religion out of the public spaces in Turkey, turns it into a museum. I go there many times. It's quite frankly one of my favorite buildings. It's an incredible landmark of history. What the museum did was to preserve both the Islamic nature with the four caliphs' calligraphy, the minbar, the mihrab, but also all of the Byzantine icons. There's incredibly beautiful mosaic icons of Jesus, of Mary, of Justinian presenting Hagia Sophia to Mary. It is a beautiful depiction of both the Christian and Muslim histories. To turn it into a mosque after all of those centuries of it being a church and then later a museum is a major revision of history, which President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is doing partly to try to re-Islamicize Turkey and reverse centuries of Turkish history. It is a big deal in many ways.
Is he trying to become the de facto head of this kind of the old Ottoman Empire?
The neo-Ottomanism term is becoming widely used. Erdogan has spent billions of dollars opening mosques, rebuilding much of Turkey, but also expanding Turkish power into Syria, into Iraq, into Libya, where, again, he's backing the Government of National Accord, and also doing a lot of natural gas exploration in the Mediterranean, where there's enough natural gas to supply the United States alone for 10 years. This is a major deal. And Turkey right now is coming very close to conflict with Greece because the Turks are now moving into waters that Greece claims. So Turkish behavior under Erdogan has become extremely destabilizing and I would argue destructive in the region.
Just we have very few, just a little bit of time here. What could Greece do to Turkey? I mean, Greece has nothing.
Well, you're right. The problem is that France has lined up with Greece and said, you can't, Turkey can't do this. France has
What's France going to do about it?
Well, France has sent an aircraft carrier in. And what
But they have to use it, don't they?